Welcome to the Mommy Matters podcast, where Mommy Matters is a double entendre that states and declares that mommies matter, where we have conversations surrounding mommy matters from conception to pregnancy to postpartum, mother and father wounds, dating, mindfulness and self-care, spirituality, parenting, discipline, legislation, money, and so much more. It is my hope and my prayer that the information that you gather here serves as a blueprint for generational and individual ascension. Enjoy. I'll just say this. All right. Welcome to this month's edition of the Mommy Matters podcast. And we are talking about pregnancy, postpartum, and domestic violence. And this month is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And I, had this epiphany, this conversation after listening to a conversation. I think my mind, even though I'm in this space of mother's wellness, my mind sort of blocked out this the possibility of this because of how
it's so egregious
that a woman would be harmed. But then I became even more disgusted by reading some of these facts, and so I went and looked up a some facts about this topic. And I found this fact sheet through the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And I want to read just a few of them. There's quite a few statistics, but I want to read a few of them before I introduce my guest, who is going to share her story. So first fact, homicide is the leading cause of death among pregnant women in the United States. 50 to 75% of women abused before pregnancy are abused during pregnancy. Women with unintended pregnancies are 2 to 4 times more likely to experience physical violence than women with planned pregnancies. In some cases, unintended pregnancies resulted directly from physical violence that included marital rape. Pregnant homicide victims are more likely to be killed with a gun than non-pregnant homicide victims. To me, that means that the job is ensuring that the job is being done. Mm-hmm. Women who are abused during pregnancy are more likely to delay entry into prenatal care. Pregnant adolescents have an elevated risk of violence from their partners when compared with pregnant adults.
Wow.
Intimate partner violence during pregnancy is linked to depression, substance abuse, smoking, anemia, first and second trimester bleeding, less than optimal weight gain, and unhealthy eating patterns. Another fact that I came across, which is something to be aware of, is that women who are abused have a lesser connection with their child. So we know that connection that mothers have with their children, even before pregnancy, quite frankly, but during pregnancy and definitely after pregnancy, is critical to the brain development and the development of the child.
Yeah.
So all of these facts are make me think so much, but I'm not going to continue to talk because I want Lorena to introduce herself and to get into discussing telling us more about herself. So Lorena, thank you so much for joining.
You're welcome.
So tell us about yourself first, what you do, et cetera.
Okay, well, my name is Lorena. I am a survivor of domestic violence. But before I had ever experienced anything like that, I was the owner of a business. I own a holistic beauty business. I focus on clients who need internal and external healing. We start with the internal and evolve to external beauty services. But I also am a licensed certified doula, which transpired throughout my domestic violence because I was so alone and so mistreated. But I am a mother. I have 3 children and 1 on the way. Two of those children were conceived and born into a domestic violence relationship. So I'm here. That's what I am. I'm here. I'm present.
You are a survivor.
And I'm alive and mm-hmm. I'm thriving.
You're alive. Your children are alive and you're here to share your story that will hopefully bless someone, heal someone, encourage someone to, step out of their situation, encourage family members to look at the relationships differently.
Yeah.
Right. Then they look at the relationships that some of their family members may be in.
Yeah.
That's another element to this that we don't often talk about.
For sure.
And so I guess, how do you share your story about how everything transpired?
I typically haven't, I really haven't. It's here and there are pieces, and it's ironic that we got in touch this week just because my court case actually has just finally been pulled for me to testify for next week. And it's been on hold for 2 years because of COVID. Oh, wow. So I didn't really feel like there was a lot of space to share. Here and there, I shared pieces of my testimony because family, friends, clients, people saw me go through it and get out of it. But it never really felt like there was a lot of space to truly share because it was so humiliating. Like outside of the hurt and the pain and all that, I think the delay in leaving and the delay in sharing came from being humiliated. Like, how did someone like me or anyone, how did I get here? Like, how did I allow this? I just felt like I really felt at fault. I really felt guilty and ashamed. And even when I did start to try to share it with law enforcement, with counselors, I still felt this tone of like, well, what took you so long? Like that kind of thing. Or why didn't you say anything sooner? Or when the first time happened, why didn't you call the police? There's like all these questions. And then on the opposite side of the spectrum was, I would have never, you should have done this, you should have done that. Nobody could have ever treated me like that. I would have killed him. And so on both sides, you hear society say either you took too long, I doubt you're telling the truth. And on the other side, it was like, I told you it wasn't perfect. I told you he was no good. And it just made it really difficult to share. So I'm kind of glad to have this opportunity to kind of open up the box of where it started for me. And now that I've talked to other women who have reached out saying, your story sounds like mine, it kind of seems like it's a recurring theme. They just got caught at the right moment, the right season of their life where they were looking for something, and that person, especially abusers, they have this like predatory sense. They know who to kind of target and how much they can get away with and what they can get away with. Mm. And he definitely met me at a time where, I did want somebody. I wanted to be loved. I wanted to be in a relationship. I was a successful business owner. My oldest child was 10. I had been married and divorced already, had suffered several miscarriages within my marriage. And so for someone to come along who was a single father, I thought was admirable. He had dreams and aspirations, and I had fulfilled a lot of mine. I was like, I could help him. He doesn't have a lot, but I don't need a lot because I have my own stuff, So it was like all the promises. He knew what to promise. He knew how much to deliver and how much not to deliver. And it just seemed really strategic. Immediately he was in love and infatuated, and we're gonna have a family, and I'm gonna give you those babies. God's gonna bless us. He would pray over my womb and say that the reason why I lost those other children was because he wasn't there yet. It was I was destined for him, and all the things that especially a woman at the time of my life wanted to hear, like, yeah, you're right, it's just gonna be me and you now. And as soon as I was pregnant, as he proposed, we're going to get married. And literally, once I got through like that first trimester, he just knew I got her. I gave her everything she had been praying for. She's not going to leave me. And anytime I tried to leave, he would try to take my baby. He filed for custody of my newborn child when I tried to leave. He's taken her. He's threatened her life, threatened my life. And it just continued to go on. But because initially it wasn't violent in the sense of physicality, mm-hmm. it was tearing up the house. It was taking money, taking my car, leaving me stranded, or lots of cheating, lots and lots and lots of cheating. I was pregnant, so if he liked to smoke cigarettes, he would like roll up the window and dare me to roll it down if I was in the car with him. I'm pregnant, or I have a newborn at the time, and you're smoking cigarettes, or you're not, you know, just it would start with things like just trying to see how much I was willing to fight him. He was a professional boxer. I wasn't gonna fight him. I'm not about to fight you.
Right.
We grown, you know, just let me go. And then it got increasingly violent the more I would try to leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oof. Let's take a moment to pause and breathe with that.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. So how do you, did the relationship accelerate quickly, you would say? Like,
oh yeah, faster than I would have normally allowed. But I think too, once you're like in your 30s and you've kind of established, it's like either we know or we don't, you know, it's kind of this concept, either you know you want to be together or you don't, like.
Yeah.
And not to the point where it's like, okay, you're doing too much. It was like, huh, this man knows what he wants. And really, he definitely used being a single father. I had no idea what the circumstances were or why he had those children, but he absolutely used that to pull on my heart. You know, their mother left them. All I wanted to do is create a family. All I want is a mother for my children and a wife to stand by me. You know, very, very good. Very good with mapping out a future that sounded reasonable. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it moved very quickly. We met in March. By May, he was asking me to have a baby. And I was like, I don't think I can do that. Like, this is my history. This is my experience. Oh, don't worry. He started to pray over me and convince me that if I give you a baby, that means you got to marry me. I'm like, well, I'm not going to marry you unless I know I could do that, because I don't want to let you down. You know, I don't want to feel like I can't give you something that you're saying you really want.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately, I got pregnant the first try, and I was still scared that I wouldn't make it past the first trimester. So he waited till after the first trimester before proposing. And once I made it through, he proposed. He was at every single doctor's appointment, but he was unemployed. So he had the time.
Mm.
And he was abusive. And so there was only one instance where he wasn't at an appointment with me, and I reported the abuse to the doctor who showed up at the time to that appointment.
Mm-hmm.
The next appointment I went to, he was with me. And the doctor came and said, I thought you were leaving the state. I thought you were looking for safety. I thought you needed your medical records.
Mm-hmm.
My doctor.
Wow. So no anonymity, no understanding of the realities of domestic violence. And this is something that definitely is something that needs to be considered when we're talking about maternal wellness. Because many women, the statistics tell us that many women do not report. First of all, the doctors don't ask, right?
They don't.
Mm-mm. And so women do not report. They may not even see it as something that they can report to their doctor
right.
to receive help.
Right.
And so this is a testimony that you can report and you should report, but also for doctors that you anonymity.
There has to be some education there, because that instance put my life in danger.
Yeah.
I put my baby's life in danger. I was 8 months pregnant at the time.
Mm. Was the man, was it a doctor, a man doctor, a male doctor?
The doctor who I told was a man. He actually was the emergency physician when I delivered my daughter. Now I was pregnant with my son. And so when he came in the room, because my doctor, I had an emergency appointment because I was trying to get away. And so he happened to be the doctor there. And so he came in, he was like, what's going on? And I told him, I was like, I need my medical records. I'm doing like a month. So if I have to leave and go to a different place, I want to make sure I'm still safe and cared for properly according to my medical records. So he printed off all my medical records and everything. A couple weeks later, after he had the the partner convinced me to stay, at least let me see my son be born, and all the crying and the fiasco, you know, of it all. He met me at my next, because I wouldn't let him around, he met me at the next appointment. And the female doctor who was actually my OB had apparently been relayed the message that I was planning to leave. This was the circumstance. So when she walked into the room, oh, you're here. I thought you were leaving. I thought you were. And he's wow. sitting there next to me.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Completely unprotected. Yeah.
This is definitely shining light on something that needs to be included yeah. in the conversation around maternal wellness, maternal health. Literally, I have not heard this as part of the conversation yet. And trust me, I've been in a lot of conversations. And so thank you so much for sharing that perspective. You definitely were active in the process of trying to leave. And we know that domestic violence, the statistics show us that domestic violence victims have to, they leave before they fully leave.
I think it's like seven times maybe.
Before they actually leave. And that's for a lot of different reasons, you know? So, you know, it could be because of financial reasons. It could be because they have no one else, you know, no one else, as you said, there's a lot of guilt and shame around, you know, experiencing this, and people oftentimes do not understand. And so they think that it's just a mere thing of, oh, just getting up and leaving. It can be, but it takes a lot of strategy. Right.
You have to be smart and not emotional, which is hard to be when you're, especially when you're pregnant or just given birth, because now you're in mama bear mode. So yeah, you want to leave because you feel like that's a safe thing to do, but you also know how much danger that could bring you and your babies now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's like this, you're like torn, you know, is it that bad? You know, can't it like, can I figure this out? Like, maybe it was me, because abuse is really psychological. Mm-hmm. Once they've gotten you to believe that they are capable of hurting you, they don't actually have to really hurt you anymore.
Right.
You know, they can continue to use the times that they did to make sure you stay in line, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Because
what
like
you
I said,
just said is key. You said, maybe it is me.
Yeah.
When you start to question yourself like that.
It's like they take over your mind. Mm-hmm. They convince you that you're crazy, like it's you. And then for him, like I said, he was a professional fighter. Mm-hmm. And so he never like hit me in my face or any, I was never bleeding, not until the very last attack where I finally like got away. But he would always say, I didn't break anything. I could really hurt you. You think I hurt you? I'm a licensed fighter. I can hurt you. You're not hurt.
Wow.
How am I not hurt? I'm like literally bruised in every place that people would never guess to look, you know? And then with like the actual, you know, throwing around, the first time he ever actually like balled a fist and punched me, I was like 7 months pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah. Like trying to bite me, physically attacking me. I was 7 months pregnant. So now I'm like, okay, where do I go? Like, where am I supposed to go? The thing is, I am 1,000 miles away from my immediate family. So I've created like a support system here, but this isn't where I can run to my mom or run to my dad or my grandma, you know, my sisters, nobody is here. One of my brothers is in prison and now my twin brother is deceased. So he would challenge me, like, who are you going to call? I'm all you have.
Yeah.
You know, and when somebody for 3-4 years is saying it like constantly, and then when you do feel alone, you do feel like you're right. I don't have anybody to call. And even if I think of calling these people, I'm going to put them in danger. This person will hurt them because he's hurting me and he actually has a relationship with me. He doesn't care about them. What's going to stop him from hurting my mom or my sisters?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you're stuck thinking about everything except for the effective ways of actually getting away.
Right. That's critical right there. This is why when people do help people who are escaping, that plan that they help them create is liberating for them. You actually can think of, what do I need to do? Okay, I need to copy these paperworks. I need to save up some money. I need to, you know, so you have something actionable going on. That doesn't make it less worse, but it does say, you know, if I need to get up and leave in the middle of the night, you know, I have what I need to have, you know? Yeah, that isolation piece. I know that a lot of people have been talking about this Netflix movie,
The Maid. The Maid.
And a lot of what you're saying is so in that.
That thing is so triggering, you know. And the thing is, what I appreciate about it is that he never really, like, you know how some movies you see abuse is like this drunk who's slapping her around, and you know, it's very like graphic, right? But nobody really ever talks about the mind games, the using the child as a pawn, the addictions and things that the partner has. And so you feel like this trauma bond. A lot of times this abuse starts with trauma bonding with people who you think you can save or fix. And a lot of times you see a darkness in them that you can identify, that something you've experienced, and you wish that you had someone like you to stick by you or to help you through it. And so you stand by monsters who really don't want help. They're nothing like you in the sense that they don't actually want to heal or be helped. They like taking anything they can get. They're like vampires, you know? And when you challenge their lifestyle, or, you know, you need help, or you need healing, or let me pray for you, or whatever it is. You know, I, at one point I took him to the river and washed him and gave an offering to Oshun, honey. He needs help. He needs love. He needs whatever he needs. He can't keep touching me like this. So y'all better, ancestors better do something with him, because this is getting to be too much, you know? But he didn't want no help. He thoroughly enjoyed being a womanizer and an abuser and taking everything he can get. And he absolutely felt entitled to being cared for by women with the most, he had the most bitterness about specifically Black women and what our responsibility was to him as a Black man in the world.
How was his relationship with his mother?
Sick. She still lives with her. He's almost 40. She helps raise the children. He never worked while we were together. He has not had a job since I've left. It's been over 2 years. So for at least the last 7 years, he's had no employment.
I feel bad for the children.
Absolutely. I was raising those other children. And that was another thing. From the first time I even met his children, his daughter was about 6 at the time. And she asked me from the first meeting, could you be my mother? And that sounds cute to some people. That doesn't sound cute to me, because I told her, you have a mother. She may not be here right now, but I don't know the circumstances of that relationship, so I'm not gonna like bandwagon him saying that, oh, she don't want you, she don't love you, she abandoned you, because I don't know the truth. So if you're asking me, you don't know me, baby girl. I'm here for you in whatever capacity you need me in, but I'm sure your mommy loves you.
And that's certainly a red flag for sure, you know, especially if you ask the person that you're with, like, what would make that be something that, you know?
Well, because he was training them. I found out through time that he was training them and asking, well, which girl should we stay with tonight? And which one do you like the most? And who should, and telling them what to say. And they would get in trouble. At one point, his middle son was calling me by the wrong name, almost intentionally, I believe, to kind of let me know what was going on. Because we were really close. We had established a serious bond. And they would get in trouble if he felt like their behavior was going to interfere with me taking care of them or taking care of him. Yeah, very manipulative, very controlling. Once, even when the mother who lives out of state would call to talk to them, he would sit in the room, control the conversation, take the phone. And it wasn't until after I left the relationship that I learned that he used, you know, like fraudulent documents to gain custody of them. And she had been fighting for 10 years. Now it's been 10 years to get custody of her children back. Him and his mom had conspired to take the children away because she wanted to leave. She has not had custody of her children for 10 years. And so he would use that tidbit. He would use that when I wanted to leave. He's filed for sole custody. When my daughter was 3 weeks, he filed for sole custody. When I had my son, when I went to the police about the abuse, he would file for sole custody. His mother would fill out the paperwork for him. She would hire the private investigator to try to track me down. And yeah, his mother was, so when you ask about the relationship with the mother, it's just it's strange to me because he feels like she owes him. He treats her horribly. He talks about her horribly. She talks about him horribly, but they are inseparable. They are definitely in cahoots when it comes to taking down, you know, the women.
For sure. That is deeply disturbing information. For so many reasons. However, it is something to learn from. You know, absolutely something to learn from. I am, you know, sorry that you experienced that, you and your children, not to mention your oldest child who was there seeing all of this.
Yep.
Right. And what was the experience like for him or her? Her.
Yeah, she, that one there, she's a different spirit. Right. So I thought that I was doing well since, you know, he wasn't acting out in front of her. He would act out in front of little ones because they were too young to know the difference, so to speak. Right. That's what I think his mind frame was. But she had never actually seen him physically hurt me. She just saw the disrespect. And she didn't like, he would come into the house because we didn't actually live together. He would come into the house and she wouldn't speak, and you need to beat her. Something, she's disrespectful. She don't speak. And I'm like, hey, like, just speak. And she's like, I just, initially she wouldn't just come right off. She'd be like, I did speak. I did speak. But after a while she was like,
yeah, no.
So literally the last instance, she's really one of the biggest reasons, wake up calls that I had to, it's time to go. The last incident that actually sent me to the police department, you know, she was actually with her dad for the weekend and happened to ask to come home in the middle of an escalated crisis that he and I were going through. And she was like, I'm staying the night, because she knew he would leave. He hadn't left. He had actually been holding me hostage in my home for several days. She didn't know that. And so she asked her dad if she could come over, and she came over. And we were laying in bed. She put on a movie. This girl, something serious. Tyler Perry. What's the movie where the fiance, the mom set the daughter up with the fiance, but he's whipping her butt. Telling her to stick with him, you know, like, is he got money? He got, you know.
Right.
So she put this movie on, and the stripper part where he leaves and the fiance walks in and smacks the heck out of her. Mm-hmm. She pauses the movie. She says, Mom, he's hitting you? He's doing this to you? And I was just like, so embarrassed. Like, oh my God. That's what you think? And she was like, something's going on. What is our plan? He's not good. And I had to explain to her, I said, I know what the movies look like, but I don't want you to picture me like that. Like, just know that I'm trying. I'm really, really trying. Because months before that, we had met with her father, and I told him, I was like, hey, I'm in danger. This is what's going on. I need you to take Caden for a week or so until I can get out safely. And then when I'm in a good situation, bring me my baby, you know?
Yeah.
But I just don't want to try. I don't want her to be in the middle of this. And I don't really have anybody to take the babies. But you're her dad. I need, if you were never there for me before, I need you now.
Yeah.
And so she knew that there was something going on, but I thought that I was protecting her by her not seeing it actually with her own eyes, but she knew, she saw the bruises. And even the other kids, you know, after the fact, they were like, yeah, we saw it. You kept saying this happened and that happened. We knew the truth. We know our dad, you know. But it was her letting me know that this is not okay. Is this what's happening to you? What are we going to do about it? It's not a child's place to figure out how to survive this. Right. It wasn't a child's place to tell me to get out, you know? And I feel like that really, that impacted me so deeply. I was like, oh yeah, within 2 days, she left the next morning and I just started to make a plan. Because of course he slept outside my house. As soon as she was gone, he came right back, you know? And I was making a plan. And as soon as he got away, as soon as he left the house again, I'd have left with nothing. I grabbed my children. I got in the car. I went straight to the police station.
Hmm.
Never looked back. Never saw him again. We had court, you know, there's restraining orders, there's all these different things, but he stopped contacting me about 2 weeks after that because he kept calling and texting and calling and texting and begging and crying. And he's always fake sick or something. He always fake some type of tragedy to get me to come to his rescue. And I wasn't coming.
Right.
And, yeah. So literally after about 2 weeks, he completely stopped contacting me. And it's been 2 years. And our case just came up for trial. Mm. Our case is actually next Monday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I am, you know, the energy moves the way it's supposed to, you know what I'm saying? In terms of how it happened that you had to get out, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was time to happen. So it had to happen the way it happened.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that it did. And that, you know, he left you alone and that your daughter was who she was enough to be able to speak the truth, you know?
Speak up, yeah, to know that she could say that to me and I could take Absolutely. It. Like, oh, damn, girl, you paid attention? Because even one of the statistics you read about the bond between the children and the mother during crisis like this, it was actually the opposite for me. It had intensified. Because I was so protective over them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I felt so bad for picking him to bring them forth, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I, even now, you know, people see, like, I'm very, these my babies, I, at all costs, these are mine, yeah. and I have to protect them.
Definitely. I'm glad that you said that, because that's always the conversation we have around, you know, statistics. It's like, it's the statistics, and then it's the story, right? Inside. So, you know, don't let the statistics fool you into thinking that that's it. No, there's so many other layers to a particular story. And I'm so thankful that you feel empowered enough to share this. Yeah. There's so much here to unpack about, you know, domestic violence, about what to do. If you were to give women who are pregnant or postpartum experiencing this any advice, what would it be?
Survive. Whatever that looks like, because like I said, when I was making those attempts to leave and things like that, it felt like everybody had the answer and that either I was being too weak or too strong, or, you know, but at the end of the day, all it truly came down to was what I thought was the best way to survive with me and my babies in tow, right? So you have to be strategic. You have to make a plan, but it all has to not be about revenge or hate or the emotions that you really want to feel and expose. It has to be survival. Every thought has to be about, if I do this, will I survive? If I do that, will I survive? If I try this way, will I survive? What is the best way to survive this? Because most women don't.
Mm-hmm.
They don't survive. And if you don't survive and your children are left behind, what will happen to them?
Mm-hmm.
It is, because especially for the state of Texas, specifically where I live, you know, I know women who bring their abuser, their children every other weekend and on the holidays, because there was no actual physical abuse to the children that was witnessed, right? So you have to survive so you can tell your story, so you can protect your children, so you could live a life that you are promised. This is not, what I went through is not what God had promised me. It's not what any human being deserves.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to, once I was just focused on surviving and not trying to make it work or fix him or fix myself or literally survive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's it. That's it. That's all. Survive. Get out. Get the hell out.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it's going to be hard for, especially if you're pregnant or postpartum, it's going to be hard to do any healing when you're under that darkness.
Right.
Because somebody's always intruding on the healing, always breaking it down and starting you over.
Mm-hmm.
There is no peace there. If you watch the movie Made, there's a part where she's like sunk into this dark place and she's just kind of like floating through, you know,
yeah.
you get to that place of like, what's the point? Like, you just get defeated. Like, how am I going to make this work? Because that person is like a constant figure, always like a shadow in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Once you survive, you can do it. Listen, I went and laid on the beach for weeks with my children. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, I went to my hometown and I ate my rice and peas and my pumpkins and my oxtails. I got full. Yeah. I laid under the sun and I didn't connect with anybody. I took that time to spend with my children, bond with my children, and make sure that our hearts were at peace, that we weren't scared anymore, because we were terrified.
Yeah.
Especially my oldest. Her biggest fear was that I wouldn't survive and he would get those, her younger brother and sister,
yeah,
and treat them the way he treats those other children.
Mm.
I had a responsibility to survive. And I did that. And I want every other woman that is experiencing childbirth and postpartum, just get out first. Make that your priority. You will be able, your children are your children. They came from your womb.
Mm-hmm.
You'll always be able to mend whatever you feel like you might have disengaged or broken during that experience.
Yes. Yes.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault. There are monsters in the world. There are people who target you specifically, who are predators, and they know how to make you second guess your gut, your intuition, what's right, what's wrong. Yep. They manipulate you. You can't be in your right mind. You can't even be a good mother to your children in that situation. So the first and foremost is to survive.
Yeah.
Then you can fix all that other. Then you can make it, you can hug and kiss and lay up with your kids. Our kids slept with me. We were on a mattress on the floor for a year in a one bedroom. Somebody, I rented a room somewhere that nobody could find us. It's me and you kids. Like, I got y'all.
And you have peace. So they not even think about that, right?
They never even noticed. They didn't even care.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Peace is so priceless. Yeah.
You can restore anything that you feel like you've taken from your children by making certain choices and certain partners. But you cannot restore your life once it's taken.
Mm. Yeah.
There's nothing you could do. You have no control over the story, the children, nothing. Yeah. You're gone.
Yeah. Mm. I think that's potent information, especially the part about, you know, you can amend the relationship between your children, right? Because you have more, for lack of a better word, control over that.
Yeah.
You know, because of your connection. You can't necessarily mend the relationship with somebody outside of that. It's not your responsibility.
It's not.
Right? So don't even try to make it your responsibility. What you can mend is yourself and the connection you have with your children.
Yeah.
The other question or observation I have is, what are some things that friends and family can look out for, or things that they can do if they suspect that someone they know and love is in this kind of situation?
Be a safe place. I think what I needed the most was somebody to say, bring them kids, y'all come on. Bring them kids, y'all get out, come on, I got you. Where are you at? I'll come get you. But that fear of like him knowing where I was and things like that, you know, kept me from really wanting to ask or putting that burden on somebody. So the only true help there is, because women have, the reason why it takes so many times for victims to leave is they have to want to leave. And a lot of damage is done so deeply that, like you said, they just kind of go back and forth feeling like this is it for them. You know, like they can make it work, or I can't leave because where am I going to go? But if you have somewhere to go, if you have family and friends surrounding you that will show up and actually create a solution for you and not just gossip or talk about you, they actually say, y'all sleep on the couch and we'll find this. I found this shelter. I found this counselor. You know, there's resources to help you and there's real solutions offered. Otherwise, a lot of times it's just mouth play. You know you need to leave him. You know he ain't no good. Where will I go? You're not gonna open your home to me. You're not gonna get come pick me up and tell him to bag back. Ain't no uncles and cousins, nobody showing up, you know. But as a community, I think that it really boils down to a lot of times these people are cowards. These men are cowards.
I was gonna say, I wonder if, because I don't know if I've ever heard of instances where the abuser has tried to actually attack, you know, somebody who helped the woman. I don't think that I've heard that. I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
I've heard it personally happen. It does happen sometimes, which is why there is a real fear for people who are like not wanting their family to get hurt. But more often than not, and more cases than I can even count, when I've talked to other women, when they had a male influence or a strong masculine energy, even if it was like an auntie, uncle, an auntie or cousin who had a strong masculine
carry cousin, that gun situation,
and they pull up, and I wish I would type of right. energy, mm-hmm. where they most times they back down. But even if you don't feel like that's the wise thing to do, to insert yourself in a violent situation to protect a loved one, it's still, if you don't have no solution, there's nothing much for you to say. Help with a solution.
Right.
Tell me where to go. Tell me, okay, well, if I leave, you know, because when I left with nothing. I had just moved into a brand new condo. I left within a couple of months, I ended up, because I own my business. I lost my car. I lost my place. Luckily, because of the county, they were able to like release me from the lease I had just signed because I had proof of domestic violence. So there was no charge there, but still the utility bills. So by the time a year had passed, I had lost everything. A couple of people I knew from Facebook moved my things into storage for me because I was too scared to go back to my home. So I had like the things that they put in storage. I ended up selling the storage so that I could have money to like get a phone turned on. And, you know, so... And luckily there were people around me who, once they realized the seriousness, they, you know, even people who I didn't know, like, what do you need? Because this is not healthy. This is not okay, you know? But for some women, they don't have that, you know? So if there is loved ones around, the only thing I would say is if you're going to approach this type of situation, it is delicate. Keep the judgment. We know you strong and nobody, no man would ever try you like that. We get it. Okay, but what's the solution for the man that has hurt the person you love? Do you have somewhere that you could send them? Do you have a couple of dollars to put them in a hotel where nobody could find them so that nobody else is in danger? You know, is that person serious about leaving? Remind that person that they don't have to do this. You don't have to be here. There's other options, you know?
I think so that's critical, the psychological piece, like building them up. Building them up. Yeah, because that's, you know, when you it's hard for you to leave when you're so broken down, as you said.
You're broken down.
And the building them up.
For abusers who are like my ex, he took pride in taking me from here to here.
Yeah.
You got money. You think you better than me. You know, like break it. He would just break it down and break it till I felt like he had taken everything, you know? And so to have like sisters or so, or friends or clients go, you too cute for this. You're like, what's going on, girl? Like, what's going on? What do we need to do? So by the final time I came to work and we had just had this huge altercation. I had a client. She didn't know me. She was my client. She would come every couple of weeks for her lashes, you know? She pulled me into my suite and said, okay, what do you need, a flight? Because I know something's going on. You don't have to tell me. I know what this looks like. What's next? And we sat in that room and we made a plan. And within 2 days I was gone. Never saw him again. But she had solution.
Right.
And she made me feel like it was possible. Like, right. What do you need? Because I felt like I was like, how am I going to do this? Like, that's what I would obsess over. How am I going to do this? I just didn't know. I felt like he would take the children. He would hurt my children. That was the constant threat. And so I don't want you to hurt my children. And he absolutely did file. He did file to take them from me, but with no success so far. So.
And he will not be successful.
Well, no, he won't be. But he hasn't even made contact or been able to find me. So, right.
So yeah, no, that ain't happening.
Yeah.
So, wow. So many gems dropped here for anybody to just keep yourself aware of. What this may look like or how and how you can assist, right? Yeah. Because these are the things that are lacking oftentimes. Community is so important and powerful. You know, it's definitely a part of the song that I sing. And being in community that you can truly trust and who truly protects you and has your back. Part of that is ensuring that you're that type of person, right? So, you know, you show up like that and you'll find people like that, right? Eventually. And so, you know, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story. Because I know that it is going to save somebody.
Okay.
You are a business owner, so I want to make sure that you shout out your business, talk about your business, how people can contact you if they, you know, desire to connect with you. So what is your business? How can people get in touch?
My name of my company is MTM Solutions, which stands for More Than Makeup. I did start as a makeup artist and just evolved over time into all things that it seems like women need when it comes to beauty, from the internal to the external. My Instagram is MTM Solutions CEO. That's probably the best way to contact me, because my link is there. I have a book that I wrote regarding internal health. I take beauty services. I offer herbal supplements that I hand make from home, especially during this pandemic. I have a lot of clients that come to me for herbal wellness. So finding me on Instagram at MTM Solutions CEO is probably the easiest way, because everybody's on social media. But you could probably Google MTM Solutions as well.
And I'll have it in the description of this episode, so you can definitely go there and find the information that you need. And thank you so much, Lorena.
You're welcome.
Sharing your story. I wish you the best with everything. Your new baby.
Yay! Yeah.
And just everything in life. And, you know,
but that's a tidbit too. You know, that's a tidbit. This new life, there is, you know, a new person who protects and provides and is loving and loves my children. And really, a lot of times there is another chance afterwards. There is that rainbow after the storm for a lot of people. And even if you don't see it right now, I never guessed that things would have turned around in the manner that they have, and that I would be where I am today, in standing in love and standing in truth and being able to have a child where I'm not being abused, I'm not depressed, I'm resting, I'm healthy, and I'm able to bring life forth without that dark cloud. And I do believe that any person who is focused on surviving can have that too.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. Ashe, all of it.
All of that.
All of it. Yes. Yes. So thank you for that. That was a perfect way to end. Perfect way to end. Thank you all for listening. And I will see you next month. Peace and love.
Bye.
Did you like that? I know it was as informative for you as it was for me. Look, this is a process for all of us. And to keep this process going, I would love to invite you to donate to our podcast. We want to continue to give you high-level content, beautiful content that enlightens and inspires and broadens your vision to elevate you and evolve. So please feel free to go to the podcast page at anchor.fm/mommymatters. We would love to hear your questions and comments as well, so that we can discuss them in future podcasts. And you can email that to momevolve@gmail.com. You can also visit the website and send your comments there, www.mommyevolve.com. And I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Peace and love.